Good afternoon. Welcome to the program. Talkie Central on the air Monday to Friday, starting at noon. Merrick alongside Bourne and Stewart. And Stewie, I want to address you right off the top. This is a big day for our man, Justin Bourne. It's a huge day for Bourne. Huge show for Bourne.
It is?
It's a big one. It's a big day. Big day for Justin Bourne. His Islanders knocked off the Bruins last night, and his father-in-law, Clark Gillies, is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. What do you say you and I just go get some lunch, and we just let Bourne do the whole show today, victory lap style, talking about the Islanders, full dissection, player by player, related to the glory team of the early 80s, which his father, Bob, was a key part of. What do you think? You and me just take the day off and hand it off to Bourne?
Yeah, good night, Las Vegas. We'll see you tomorrow.
All right, here we go. All right, Justin, we'll turn the recreation over to you.
You guys are going to be disappointed to find out that they do defense good is not a show make, unfortunately.
What did you – okay, let's get on this page. I mean, it took me a while to really get behind the Islanders. I always thought, you know, going back a couple of years, that – this was a mirage. This was fool's gold. It's all going to come crumbling down. And I could not have been more wrong. Great coaching. Great goaltending. You mentioned defense. Pelech and Pulock are like the shutdown pair in the playoffs, period. Bourne, you watch this team more than me and Stewie. How did they do it?
Well, they got in a place, fortunately, where the other team gave them a couple opportunities and the goaltending wasn't amazing. Like, if you let them get up a goal or two, I don't think there's a team in the NHL who is more comfortable when the job is sit back into your system and play well. Keep pucks out of your net. I mean, the Tampa Bay, Colorado, Vegas, I don't think any of them do that better than the New York Islanders. The problem, typically, is that they run into a team that can defend and with a goaltender and, you know, it gives them a hard time scoring goals, and they just run out of offense at some point, which, you know, remains to be seen. That could happen. But, boy, when they were up on that Boston Bruins team, I cannot believe how they controlled the play. I don't think I've ever seen a team like the Boston Bruins, who are good and have top-end firepower, so utterly neutered with their backs against the wall, with a big push coming. They got five shots in the third period. It was unbelievable display of dominance by the Islanders.
Yeah, it was. Go, Stewie.
No, I was going to say, it's almost like the Avengers. Other teams, you know, are an Iron Man or a, you know, they have their respective star. But at every given night, a different guy steps up. You know, it could be Bailey or Brock Nelson or Pageau. And, oh, yeah, by the way, there goes Jordan Eberle, you know, stepping up his game too. So they have four solid lines, three scoring lines. That fourth line, it could be the best fourth line in hockey. So I think this could really be the blueprint for teams that are consistent. You know, if you have the, you know, the high-flying team, you might get in, you might go all the way, you might not. But this should be a message to GMs. Like, this is how you build your rosters. And again, look at the rosters. There's a lot of mid-level guys, a lot of guys between $2.5 and $4.5 million. Those have to be the majority of your role-playing guys. You can't have too many high-paid guys. I know that's, you know, you don't want to hear that in this market, but this should be the blueprint on how teams should be built. It's a good team. This is not a club. This is a team in every sense of the word.
Every general manager is loving what you're saying. So, Stewie, what you're saying is don't pay anybody.
Yeah, give them $4 million, everybody. Everybody makes four. I'd rather that. Everyone gets four. Fourth line, four. First line, four.
Yeah.
I want my four. Where's my four at?
Stewie's a communist. Let it be known.
All right.
Spread it around.
Red Stewie. Okay, good. We got that out of the way. A couple of things here. One, full credit to the Islanders. I want to get to the fans here in a couple of moments. I want to get to the goaltending. I want to get to the blue line. I want to get to Kyle Palmieri and Jean-Gabriel Pageau.
But and also Boston, Taylor Hall. Can we get there too, Jeff, at some point?
We're going to get there. Don't worry. We're going to get to Taylor Hall. We're going to get to Taylor Hall, who was really not a factor in this series. We're going to get there. This is a Boston Bruins team that seemed to flat out run out of steam, and they really ran out of steam, Bourne, to your point, in the third period, where they were there was nothing there. There was no power in stride. There was no second effort. There was just, let's just get this over with, if you're the Boston Bruins. And one of the things that, and I'll be curious to hear how, you know, Bruce Cassidy talks about it, is Tuukka Rask, right from the first shot, did we not look at Rask and say, he's having a hard time moving in there. He's really not looking good in his crease. Like, he's having a hard time moving around. And he was kept in. 6-2 is the final score. Islanders win the series. Is part of this story here the fact that their starting netminder, one of the best netminders in the NHL, couldn't move, and their blue line was just decimated? And Bieksa talked a lot last night about Charlie McAvoy. And McAvoy seemed to be trying to do everything on his own because he didn't have any help. Like, this was McAvoy stand the bunch. Brandon Carlo's out with a concussion. Like, the whole blue line seemed to be nicked up. Yesterday, bad performances all around, most notably Matt Grizzlick, who had a challenging night. Do we not, Borny, look at this and say, yes, full credit to the Islanders, but man, that was a bruised bunch on the other side.
Yeah, definitely. The Brandon Carlo loss, I think, was a major difference maker in this series because it forced an area where the Bruins were already thin to become a real, you know, open wound for them. You know, Grizzlick's a good player, and he made that awful turnover on the Nelson goal. You know, the Rask thing, Jeff, I know that was bad, wasn't it? Pulled it right across in front of his body.
Terrible.
But the Rask thing is like, you know, he covers up a lot of problems for that team, as good goalies do. That's not an insult. Like, good goalies save you major mistakes. And I thought, you know, even the Grizzlick one, like, Nelson gets a breakaway. It's not a great shot, to be honest. It kind of goes armpit hole and hits the middle of the net. You know, the fourth goal that they score off the bobbled puck in front kind of goes through Rask's pad. Like, I thought Rask was a major deficiency. Like, if you're not going to have the defensive depth, you need him to be special, and he wasn't just average. I think he was below average in that deciding game, or last two games, really.
I have no problem dunking on the Boston Bruins and, you know, telling them to call the Wambulance, because, you know, part of going through the Stanley Cup is dealing through injuries. And I'm surprised no one has mentioned yet that Anders Lee's been out. He's only played 27 games this year, and he's their captain and one of their top players. And no one's mentioned him once, because that you have to have depth. You have to have that next man up mentality. And if you want to win the cup, we saw what happened last year with Stamkos out for majority of the playoffs. You've got to have guys willing to step in. And what I like about Toronto this year, I know all roads lead back to Toronto, is when Tavares went down, you saw what players like Kerfoot can do. So when guys get that expanded role, they really step in and play above and beyond. That's the making of a true team. So I think the Islanders, I think that's why they're destined this year, because they have that depth. They have four lines. Guys are playing between 12 and 18 minutes. There's no one going up into the 25, 26 minute mark. They're getting it done by committee. That's the sign of a true team.
All right, catnip time for Justin Bourne. Justin, Taylor Hall.
You know, all I heard about, you know, being here in this Toronto market was the Leafs should have got Taylor Hall instead of Nick Foligno. And yeah, okay, if it's as simple as that, sure, give me Taylor Hall. But you would have had to move more pieces. It would have been harder to do, cost more assets, yada, yada. Anyway, so the Taylor Hall thing, like, you know, we had people talking about this guy in the first round like he was prime of Genny Malkin or something, because he was contributing a little bit on the second line for the Bruins. This series against the Islanders, where, you know, it got a little bit tough, you know, defensively, Taylor Hall, the last three games, no points, -5. He had a goal and an assist over a six-game series. He was playing less than Willie Nylander plays for the Leafs. Like, it was not a display by any means in a positive way. And he's playing on a good team alongside David Krejci. So, you know, it just, some of the rhetoric around him got blown out of proportion when he went from Buffalo and kind of was reinvigorated there for a bit. I don't know that for anyone he was going to be a Band-Aid to solve all their problems.
Did anybody, and perhaps there were some, did anybody at the trade deadline say the Islanders' acquisition of Kyle Palmieri will be more impactful than the Bruins' acquisition of Taylor Hall? Because at the end of it, that's the truth. That's the flat-out truth here.
Yeah. I don't know that anyone said that. Maybe that was Lou Lamoriello's thinking when he makes those moves, as veteran guys who, you know, seem to play within traffic a little bit better. Maybe he saw that coming, but no, I don't think any of us would have made that prediction. Palmieri's been unbelievable, by the way.
Palmieri's been outstanding, and maybe the ultimate swerve here is that at the end of this season, the Bruins pursue him and he becomes a B. Who knows? But Stewie, do you have a thought on what we saw with Taylor Hall, the prize acquisition for the Boston Bruins at trade deadline time? We'll get on the Bruins page here and what's next in a second.
Well, I just think Taylor I'll add about, and I was not surprised by Kyle Palmieri, because, you know, Lou Lamoriello identified him to come in and play a specific specific role. We're going to plug you in here. You're going to have good chemistry with these guys, and you're going to make the most of your opportunity. I think with Taylor Hall, it's like, well, we might play first line, might play a second line, see what you can do, and let's just hope for the best. But, you know, as you get deeper into the playoffs, it gets harder. It's tighter checking, and I'm not surprised that the Islanders shut him down. So I don't think it's so much him playing bad. You know, they don't get that park the bus reputation because they're known for letting guys go end to end and score big goals. You saw all these goals. Most of these goals in this playoff series have been, you know, shooting for sticks, redirects, second and third opportunities, digging, going into the corner. And if you're going to be a team off the rush and off the fly, it's going to be tough to go deep. You're looking at Colorado have trouble right now, whereas teams like the Vegas Golden Knights are getting to the net. So give Taylor Hall some credit. I would classify his success, his playoffs as success, and give him all the money too while you're at it in free agency.
Well, that's $4 million according to you. That's the ceiling now for
players. Take it where you can get it. Take it where you can get it.
Everyone gets four. Comrade Stewart.
No, add a couple too. Add two extra for a hole there.
So what happens now with the Boston Bruins? When we look at the Bees, I mean, they've been a really high level team for a number of years. Of course, the big championship year in 2011, beating Vancouver in seven games. There's been a couple of trips to the Stanley Cup final. You know, most notably losses against the Chicago Blackhawks and then the St. Louis Blues a couple of seasons ago. But this has been a top team in the NHL for a long time. And we've looked at the Bruins and said, okay, when is it going to be that time where we start to see the team slip and you start to see some cracks and things like aging curves become something that affects the Boston Bruins? Certainly not for players like David Pastrnak, but maybe players like Patrice Bergeron and Tuukka Rask and Brad Marchand, players that are well into their 30s as they look to maybe transition this team into some of the younger players. Are, Justin, the Boston Bruins at that point now? You know, one of the first players leaves last year, and that is Zdeno Chara. Tuukka Rask is an unrestricted free agent. David Krejci is an unrestricted free agent. Taylor Hall is an unrestricted free agent. You may look at this and say, you need to bring these guys back because it's still a good team. You might look at it and say, they need this cap space if they're going to go out and try to get Jack Eichel. Or you may look at this and say, this is the moment where this team needs to start to think about rebuilding what they already have. Choose one, Justin.
Yeah, I don't think this is a rebuild situation for this team. Like, there's, you know, Stewie and I were on the morning show and mentioned this a little bit, but just like, there's still too much there. They are a team that seems like they're in a retool situation. I think it's a matter of what will some of these key pieces who are UFAs sign for? Like, can you get Tuukka Rask for a couple of years at $5 million? Can you get David Krejci at a good number again? Can Taylor Hall come in at what he used to make, 5.5? You know, what are you going to have to pay for these guys before you can really make your assessments on what to do with the rest of the roster? It seems clear to me that the young guys they have trying to step in are not good enough. You know, they're not going to win a cup handing the team over to those guys. So bigger things have to be done, and that involves assessing, do we need an Eichel? Do we need to make a move to shore up our defense? But first you start with what it's going to cost to get the guys you need.
Well, Jeff, I think you're being very ageist because you look at teams like Pittsburgh and who have Malkin and Crosby. No one says, oh, you know, those guys are getting long in the tooth. No, you have Crosby and you have Malkin. Every single year you go for it. And until you have this perfection line, you know, being the imperfection line, you got to go for it every single year. So I think, you let some of those older guys go, but you got to get a little bit younger, a little bit quicker. But you have Marchand, Pastrnak, and Bergeron, and they're probably one of the top three top lines in the National Hockey League. Until they underperform, I think you got to go for it every single year. And the one thing is, especially on this program, we've been discounting these guys for 3 years. I've only been on this program for two, but probably a year before that too, everyone was talking about these guys coming down to earth. So I think they're still one of the top teams. They got to retool on the fly, figure out what they're going to do. Is Swayman going to be the guy? Do they bring in another veteran goaltender? But Boston Bruins, they're a perennial contender, and I think next year's no different.
You know, that's interesting, too, that you bring up the net mining situation. I don't think anyone thinks that the Boston Bruins are ready to hand the keys over to Jeremy Swayman. He may be a real good, you know, consistent starting goaltender one day. But, well, listen, there's a free agent. See, doesn't all of it hinge on the decision with the net minder? And is Tuukka Rask coming back? And to Borny's point as well, what's the number for Tuukka Rask? Like, the thing about the Pittsburgh Penguins, that example, so much of the work that, whether it was Crosby or, listen, Malkin was dinged up, a lot of the work that the Penguins were able to do, Jake Gensel, take your pick, was kind of undone by Tristan Jarry. Like, unless you have the goalie, like, in a lot of ways, it doesn't really matter what you do up front or on your blue line, because your goalie will undo all of it. So to me, I look at the Bruins and I say, so much of the decisions on what this team is going to be hinge on who's the goalie going to be. But maybe we ask that question about every team at the end of every season. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, it's just, for Tuukka Rask, like, if you ever know, if you could guarantee you're going to get a goaltender who's going to play at a 920, you know, you would give him $10 million without turning around, without thinking. You'd be at $10 million, bucks, 920.
If you guarantee 920, yes.
Yes. So for Tuukka Rask, it's like he made $7 million last year. You know, and he's not going to cost much less than that. He was very good this year. So, you know, are you sure that that's going to get you a 915 or whatever it's going to be? If you're not, can you get, you know, goaltending that's a 915 somewhere else cheaper? The answer is probably yes. So it depends what you believe Tuukka Rask is going to be, where his level of commitment is, his level of physical health is a big question. You have to assess what you're going to get from Rask next year.
Essentially, maybe what I'm asking here, guys, is when you look at this division next season, because let's not forget, the divisions are going back to normal. Is Boston still going to be in that mix with Tampa and Toronto and Florida when it's all said and done next season? Like, going into next season, Montreal fans,
They're staying in the Canadian division.
You have
by themselves. Them in the CN Tower.
They wanted it.
The CN Tower. Yeah. They're playing at the CN Tower, the new home arena.
Can you not? Hang on. Just as an.
They're converting the 360 restaurant. It's going to be the new Bell Center.
Putting a rink at the base.
Yeah. Just at the top. Not at the base. It's right at the top. If you're a Leafs fan, you got to walk up the stairs. If you're a Habs fan, you take the elevator. Leafs fans got to walk.
I love it.
Dude, can you not, though? Hang on. Can you not, though, see Montreal, based on the performance, even if they flame out the next round against either Vegas or Colorado, can you not see Montreal saying, this run is proving that we're only one or two pieces away, and they go and sort of hit fast forward on all of this?
Yeah.
Instead of saying, we're riding hot goalie right now, boys.
Bergevin is the guy at the blackjack table that, you know, he's got his last $100 and he goes all in and he doubles up and he keeps doubling up and now he's at $100,000. Like, you know what? I'm at $100,000. You know what? I'm going to let it ride and I'm going to keep going for it. I'm still at the table. So I could see him going and having another big free agency for sure. I could see that happening for sure.
Burse is going to walk at the end of this and be like, listen, I took that team to the conference finals last year, the semifinals. I've done enough. I'm free of this debacle. I'm going to lift weights on Venice Beach. That's I'm going to live there now.
Look at my feathers. Look at my suit. I'm looking good. I'm off the... Okay, so... All right, well, we'll see what happens with the Boston Bruins in the offseason. It'll be another fascinating one for that team. Back to the Islanders here for a second. I had a friend of mine text me that even when the game was out of reach, he couldn't turn it off. And it wasn't because of the players. It wasn't because he wanted to see handshakes. He said he wanted to watch the rest of the game just to hear the crowd. And I think there are a lot of people that are looking at that game last night and watching that game last night. And part of the entertainment of that game was that crowd. The chants are great for Pageau, outstanding. The New York Saints chants every time the Islanders get a penalty. I hope that stays forever. And that is always a thing with the Islanders. We make a lot about, you know, creative fans. And, you know, you look at the Winnipeg Jets, and still maybe the best chant we've ever heard in recent memory in the NHL was after the Vancouver games with Winnipeg Jets chanting silver medal at Ryan Miller. Like, really creative, biting, nasty-ish stuff. I'm telling you, Borny, Islanders fans were right there with it last night and have been for a long time. That was part of the entertainment last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's few buildings in the league where you have to be careful what you say because the fans will eat you alive, and it's Nassau Coliseum, buddy. You know, like you don't get to just run your mouth about the team and then, you know, walk into there and not get treated to a nice serenade. So it was really fun. I was really happy for John Ledecky and Scott Malcolm, seeing Ledecky with the fans leading the charge and getting the fans going. You know, this is a team last year that in the pandemic found their way to the conference final, and you know, no fans, no income from that. I'm happy for the team that, you know, the owners who saved this franchise essentially are being rewarded with some gate revenue, and for the fans being able to be there, just an awesome experience for everyone.
Yeah, let's talk about the building. The building's kind of gritty. Like, I remember walking through there, the lights were kind of dim. It was almost like Van Damme walking in Bloodsport in the Kumite, just walking through lights going out. And my welcome to the OHL moment, it's almost like the Windsor building where the fans are just so loud and they're almost cheering not for their team, against the other team. And you got Cam Jansen running around. That reminds me of Nassau. Very passionate fans. They love their team. And just that passion, I think, rubs off on their team. They have that blue-collar mentality, and it rubs off on the team and the product on the ice.
Well, how about this? My first experience as a player in Nassau Coliseum, I went to Islanders main camp in 2008, and I walked into the dressing room with my bag over my shoulder and was like, all right, put it down at like a stall to like get changed into my undergear. And I was like, where do I put my bag? Like, where's the main locker room or whatever? And they were like, no, this is it. I was like, I'm sorry, what? Like, I was fresh out of college. Like, in college rooms, you know, there's a change room and whatever. Like, I could not believe the size of the home room for an NHL franchise. It's unbelievable. It's tiny.
Like, you're walking by, like, the TV guys are doing, like, the caption, like, in the hallways, and you're, like, running past them.
It's all wedged in there. It's wild. And also, Wade Dublowitz was in the dressing room, and I thought he was the PR guy, because if you see Wade Dublowitz, he's not a pitcher of an athlete. So I was like, yeah, where do I put my stuff? Just thought I was talking to like a member of the staff. I don't know. Not a great moment for me.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Okay. So there's the Islanders and the Bruins. More on the Islanders as they'll face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. It is Trotz versus Cooper, two of the best coaches. Some would say the best coaches in the entire NHL. Pick up at that conversation maybe later on today if we have time, if not in the upcoming days. Someone mentioned Jack Eichel a couple of minutes ago. And Elliot Friedman was on WGR this morning on the Instigators talking about the Eichel situation with the Buffalo Sabres. And we've heard Kevin Adams, GM of the team, say, you know, we want essentially what the old John Tortorella or now John Davidson line is in Columbus, which is, you know, we're interested in players who want to be here. Like, we've heard Kevin Adams say that. So this should probably come as no surprise. Here's Friedman on WGR this morning talking about the Eichel situation with the Sabres. Here we go.
That's the poker game we're playing right now. These other teams are saying you've got an unhappy player who doesn't want to come back. And the Sabres, I really think at the end of the day, want to move on. They don't want him back. They want to move on. And the teams are going to play Buffalo's quote unquote desperation at that. And the Sabres have to play a game that says, okay, you guys can play that game, but somebody is going to get him. And if you play it too cool or you play us too hard line, it won't be you.
All right. So that's Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada and 31 Thoughts on WGR this morning saying essentially what should be no surprise to anybody, but there it is. The Sabres just want to move on. And this is going to be the story that dominates the headlines up until the draft, if he's moved before the draft, or if he's moved at the draft, if he's not moved till after the draft, who knows? But this is going to be the story of the off season. Borny, how do you read this one? How do you read the Sabres and Jack Eichel? And if you're a Sabres fan, should you be concerned that this is a relatively inexperienced general manager who's about to pull the trigger on one of the biggest deals in the history, and it goes back to 1970, of this franchise?
Well, you know, I think to Elliot's point is that it doesn't matter if Jack Eichel wants to come back and play for us if you're the Buffalo Sabres. It doesn't matter if he wants to come here. He's going to play somewhere. You're not bidding against us keeping him. You're bidding against other teams in the league who all want him. So there's no reason they shouldn't be able to drum up a king's ransom. There's got to be a half dozen teams trying to make this happen for Eichel. So I think it happens. I think he goes... you know, he goes somewhere like the New York Rangers continue to come to mind, but it's got to happen. The relationships are too fractured. The team's not going to win. He's not going to play happily there, give him their best. It's got to be the end.
Stewie?
Yeah, what I don't understand is just, you know, the leaking of everything, and they're treating him almost like a distressed asset. And it's been pretty known, you know, almost for a year now that Eichel is out of Buffalo. So I don't understand the leaking of the medical info. This is a guy now that scored 36 goals. He's a, you know, former second overall pick in the National Hockey League. He was in the MVP conversation for a while. So to be like, it's no big deal, we're going to get rid of him. No, you should be doing everything you can to get everything you can for him, because he is a top player in the league. So unless they get back, McDavid or Draisaitl, it looks like they're going to be taking an L. I know that's obviously not going to happen, but the way that this is trending, it looks like they're not going to get everything they could and should have.
So one of the issues here is that there's a disconnect between how the Sabres want to treat Eichel's neck injury versus how Eichel wants to do it. Eichel wants to have a, I don't want to say controversial, because other athletes have done it, albeit in other sports. No one's done it in the NHL. Something called artificial disc replacement. That brings with it a recovery, I believe, somewhere between 6 to 9 months. It's essentially a fusion of a couple of vertebrae here. I'm not a doctor. I only play one on the radio. Please, doctors, correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure I am. But that's what he's looking at doing. The Buffalo Sabres and their medical staff are very much against that. So it seems as if any team that wants to make a trade for Jack Eichel has to be good with him going through this procedure, which is, as I understand it, many people consider a risky procedure. So I just wonder how much that limits the field here for anyone making a trade for Jack Eichel, because not only are you agreeing to get the player, but does it not very much feel like you're also agreeing for him going through this surgery, which, again, we point out, has been used by other athletes, albeit in different sports, and has never been used on anyone in the NHL yet. That's why the Sabres have the reservations about it. That's part of the split between these two camps. I think that's why you hear Elliot on 550 this morning saying, you know, the Buffalo Sabres would probably at this point just prefer to walk away and to move on. And we know this is heading towards a conclusion that involves a trade. But whichever team it is, whether it's the Rangers, Los Angeles Kings would have to be in that mix. We just talked about the Boston Bruins. Some would say the Columbus Blue Jackets, who need a shot in the arm right now, thank you very much, could be in that conversation. They have to be good with allowing Eichel to go through surgery that's never been performed on an NHLer before. Before we get to Clark Gillies, let me ask you here, Justin. Does that give you cause for pause if you're a team trading for him?
I think you need to do your diligence on that for sure. For me, it's like, if this is a procedure that other people have used comfortably, I trust medical science, and let's go ahead to get Jack Eichel. I'm willing to roll that dice, but you don't enter in decisions like that with that kind of value and franchise-altering implications lightly.
Here's where your own medical staff gets involved too, right? Like, if you're Rob Blake in the LA Kings, for example, isn't one of the first conversations you have about Eichel with your medical staff, what do you think of this procedure? And what if your medical staff says, we're not cool with it, but you're Rob Blake and you really want to make this deal?
But I remember going through my surgery, and part of the recovery was I was not allowed to work out for 6 weeks. And the team said, no, you need to be able to work out right away. And my doctor actually did the surgery and did it his way, because he flat out told these teams, he's like, if these team doctors weren't working for you, they'd probably be working at the YMCA. This is my field. I know what I'm doing. So I think you got to take a second, third, and fourth opinion. But I also like to advocate now, whoever it is, maybe you hire Matt Nichol to help with the recovery, because he brought Ray Emery, rest in peace, back from a double Bo Jackson hip surgery. He brought Wojtek Wolski back from a broken neck, and he brought Sagan back too. So you got to get the proper trainers, proper recovery, and proper team around you, because it's too high of a risk for any player.
Always good talking about Matt Nichol. He's done a lot of great things for a lot of high-end athletes, not just in hockey either. We hit a break. Oh man, this is going to be a lot of fun. I don't know, Stewie, should we just leave Justin with this one to talk to his father-in-law?
See you tomorrow, boys. See you tomorrow.
I talked to him enough. You guys talk to him.
We'll talk to him about you. How about that? We won't even talk about the Islanders. So what do you think of Justin as a son-in-law? Be honest. We're talking to the great Clark Gillies, who we most recently saw crushing a tin of beer on his forehead. And now his Islanders are on to the next round after beating the Boston Bruins in six games. 6-2 was the final last night. We'll talk to Jethro, one of the toughest ever. Hall of Famer, legendary Islander, next on Hockey Central, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. It's a great day for the Islanders, both past and present. As they're on to the next round, they'll face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning after taking care of the Boston Bruins in what some would describe as spectacular fashion, both on the ice and off the ice, because the fans of the Coliseum all throughout this, and specifically last night, were just tremendous. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart and Justin Bourne. We are pleased to be joined now by a Hall of Famer and a guy who still looks great even when he's crushing a tin of beer off his forehead. Hockey Hall of Famer Clark Gillies joins us on Hockey Central. Clark, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm doing great. Obviously, after last night, what an atmosphere, what a game. The team just played amazing last night, and they deserve to be moving on.
They do. It's been real impressive. And we're going to park a lot of time here with you talking about these Islanders. But before we do, I do have to ask you, what possesses a man to crush a tin of beer off his head in front of a camera like you did last weekend?
Well, there's a guy that plays for the New York Jets, Dan Feeney. He's been coming to the games, and he's been smashing beer cans off his head. So I was challenged by a friend of mine, and he said, "You got to do that when they put you on camera." I said, "I'm not doing that." I said, "You got to be out of your mind." So I am kind of out of my mind, I guess. Because when third period, the game was tied at one, and somehow we needed a lift. So when they put the camera on me, I got all fired up. And actually, the beer can, I didn't want to get beer all over everybody in our section, so I had drank most of it. Took one last sip and then smashed it on my head, and then I guess I proceeded to smash it on my head about four more times. But apparently it worked, because Barzal scored about 2 minutes later, and we went on to win the game. So I'm being called the difference right now. I don't know.
You got Paul. Yeah, Paul Pierce is the truth. Clark Gillies is the difference. I like it. That's wonderful.
Thank you, Justin.
Yeah. Hey, I saw John Ledecky in the crowd, firing up the crowd and banging a drum and leading the fans in there. I know you've been in close touch with him and the ownership there, and I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about the ownership group and the difference they've made in turning that franchise in such a positive direction.
Oh, yeah, they've done an amazing job. And John Ledecky in particular. Scott Malkin is the majority shareholder, but John Ledecky is really the face of the Islanders, the face of ownership. He is the energizer bunny. He has so much energy. He was sitting right behind me on Saturday night, and I guess it was Saturday night. I forget now. They're all running together. I guess that was Tuesday night. Monday. Yeah, Monday. So he's sitting right behind me, and he goes, "Clarky," he goes, "you're sitting right on the red line." I look, I go, "Yeah, I am, aren't I? Yeah, this is nice seats. Thank you, John." And so we won the game, and he's grabbing me by the shoulder. He says, "Clarky, we got to be back here. We got to be back here on Wednesday night." I go, "Well, I'm going to try and make it." John says, no, you got to be here." So when I asked him for the tickets, I said, "I'll come on one condition. I get the same seats. You have to sit right behind me." I said, "Okay." So last night, apparently he was behind me. He called me. He says, "Clarky, you're not in the same seat. You got to move." I said, "Okay, John, sorry. I'll move over one seat." So I was on the red line. But he's becoming very superstitious, just like the rest of us. But it's what you got to do to win hockey games, because superstition really plays a big part of it.
So, yeah, so you get to see some of these games.
I still have the same dirty underwear on I had 2 weeks ago. But you know.
Are you in college? Go ahead, Stewie.
So you get to watch these games live and direct. So what would you equate their success to? Is it the system? Is it personnel? Is it team buy-in? Is it the crowd? What makes the Islanders so successful in this playoff run?
All of the above. This the fans, having to be able to put 12,000 out of 14 in that building is amazing. The team has really been fueled by the fans' support. Last night was an amazing performance by the Islanders. It, you could just see as the game went on, they were just relentless. And the Bruins, as the game went on, you could just kind of see their shoulders kind of slump a little lower, a little lower. And then I knew we had them when the Boston coach had to break up his big line, because that's a huge move. And he put Pasternak on with Krejci. And I said, I think we got them now, because they're pulling out all the stops trying to score a goal on this team. But the Islanders played with such intensity last night, and they look like a team that could beat anybody. And, you know, now playing Tampa, they're going to have to play like that for 60 minutes of every game. But they're sure looking good, and Barry Trotz has got everybody doing their job. Barzal starting to heat up a little bit with Everly, and the line of Brock Nelson, Bailey, and Beauvillier they've just been outstanding. So, and you know, not to mention, of course, Varlamov is playing some of the best goaltending I've ever seen, and it's a nice mix right now, and they're very exciting to watch.
With Clark Gillies on Hockey Central, Clark, I do wonder what it's like for you back in that building. I mean, the venue of so many great championships and celebrations and highs. I mean, we talk dynasty when we talk about your Islanders. When you're back at the Coliseum, what are some of the memories that come flooding back? Whether it's, you know, your coach, Al Arbor, whether it's, you know, the bow tie, Bill Torrey, whether it's the Trio Grande line. Like, what comes to your mind right away when you walk into the Coliseum?
Well, obviously, I think about all the tradition. I mean, you walk in and you see all the banners up there, and certainly all the retired jerseys. And but the thing that really, after the last two games of being there, I feel sorry for the fans. I mean, I'm absolutely exhausted after the games. And I think back to us doing that for 5 years in a row, going all the way to the end, unfortunately not winning the fifth cup in a row. But as a fan, you're exhausted, and I can't believe they had to do that for 5 years straight.
Poor fans.
I was like, there's two things going to happen. You're going to have to go away for a rest, and you're probably going to have to go to rehab, because it's a full blow, full go. I'll tell you that. Holy cow! But it's a tremendous atmosphere, and I just love being in that building. It's crazy.
So, Clark, what's your expectation for the UBS Arena now? I know you know some people involved in the construction. Like, are the fans going to travel? Is it? What do you know about that building, and what are your expectations for how it's going to look in the future for Islanders fans?
They have a real treat to look forward to, Justin. The new UBS Arena is about as state of the art as you're going to get. They took a lot of time, did a lot of research. They've got the best of the best. They've got I think there's 56 mid-level suites that apparently are all sold, except for about five or six apparently. Ticket sales are going at a rapid pace. I don't know to what percentage is sold out, but it's going to be 17,000 for hockey, and apparently they've got most of them sold, so it's people are buying into this new arena. It's really not that far, that much further for me. It's about 35 minutes to the Coliseum and about 45 minutes to the UBS Arena, so it's not a big difference for a guy like me, and I think most people, you know, are kind of looking at it the same way. But it is a beautiful building, and I can't wait to see them open up there whenever that is in the fall. It looks like November now instead of October, but I just can't wait to get in there and see the atmosphere. They kind of designed it similar to the bowl. Basically, the Coliseum with 14,000 seats is one big bowl, and the majority of the seats in the new UBS Arena are down low, and they want it to be loud, so they've designed it that way, and it's going to be pretty special.
There's been a lot of talk of Brock Nelson and elevating his game in the playoffs with 22 goals in the 60 playoff games, but that's nothing compared to Mike Bossy and all the goals that he scored. Do you think he's really underrated as a playoff performer, and just how dominant was he when it came to playoffs?
Brock Nelson or Mike Bossy?
Mike Bossy.
Oh, Mike Bossy. Well, Mike Bossy's an absolute legend. He was an amazing guy to watch. Under pressure, he just fed off on all of that. And you know, he was a tremendous part of our hockey team. There's no question about that, with him and Trotz and me for a short while playing with that line. We had the responsibility to go out there and lead that team every night, and I think we did that pretty well. But Mike Bossy, in my opinion, probably the best goal scorer I've ever seen. There's a lot of good ones out there when you talk about the likes of Ovechkin and stuff, but Mike Bossy in pressure situations and down, especially in the dirty areas near the front of the net, there was nobody better. Can't give him enough accolades, that's for sure.
He was elite, as were most of your teammates on that dynasty squad. Listen, I know golf is near and dear to your heart, and we're keeping you from it. Clark, thanks so much for taking time out today, and enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and we look forward to seeing your Islanders facing off against Tampa in the next round. Thanks so much for this.
Thanks, guys. I'm really looking forward to this next series, and maybe we can do this again before they go into the finals. Wouldn't that be nice?
Look at you. He's calling it. Islanders over the Bolts. You got it.
And look at Clarky. I'm coming down soon there, Dad. Get us a tea time, will you? I'll be there in a couple of weeks.
I will definitely do that, Justin. The place is beautiful, and we got our member guests this weekend, so this is just the beginning of three very long days for me. So I'm going to
myself. Oh, boy, good luck.
Have fun.
Thanks, guys.
The great Clark Gillies, man, what a player, legendary. They got a great athlete, too. Like, as much as Clark Gillies was a tremendous hockey player, played one of the best lines the NHL has ever seen, Hall of Famer, etc. Great baseball player, great racquetball player as well. What else? Golfer. Anything else, considering he's your father-in-law and you know him a lot better than I do, anything else I should add to his athletic resume?
Well, just the golf one is ridiculous. Like, he's won that club championship at the course he's a member at, I think, 6 times and been to the finals 9 times. You know, he was a plus handicap for a while, which basically means he generally shot under par. Just soft hands around the green, great putter, which is ridiculous because you think of him as a big guy who used his hands for other purposes on the hockey rink. So, yeah, quite a talent.
What's it like having Clark Gillies as your father-in-law? I'm sure you get this asked a lot. I mean, for those that don't know, Justin's father, Bob Bourne, legendary Islander, specifically 4 Stanley Cups. And you married Clark Gillies' daughter. What's it like? What was it like the first time you met him, first of all? And what was it like when all of a sudden the two families are now joined, the Bournes and the Gillies?
Well, it's funny because, like, we had ties the whole way, like, because our dads are close. My wife and I. So Clark used to bring them. They flew out to Kelowna to visit, you know, when I was 9 years old. He sent me a driver when I was 16 years old. Like, our family stayed close. So there wasn't like a re-meeting of him necessarily. But the biggest thing is that, like, he's just such a giant of a man, hockey aside. You know, his charitable works, he's given millions of dollars to, you know, there's a wing named after him at the local hospital. You know, the stuff he does for other families in the community in general is, he's intimidating, not because he's big and tough, but because he's such a charismatic, you know, he's just a great man. I'm fortunate to have him in my life for sure.
He is a top dude. You have a quick thought, Stewie, on what's next between these two teams, the Islanders and the Tampa Bay Lightning? Some would look at this as, okay, this is going to be stifling defense versus high octane offense. How do you see this next round?
Yeah, I think it's gonna. I think the Tampa Bay. I think Islanders. Sorry, learned a lot from Tampa Bay last year in losing in the playoffs. And let's not discount the coaching of Barry Trotz. And when he came on our show a couple of weeks ago, I thought he was talking. Well, yeah, I coach my teams the same way every single time. But he adapts and coaches his teams specifically for the group that he has. So I'm sure after last year's getting bounced out, that they're coming back and they're prepared for Tampa Bay. So I could see it being a lot closer than it was last year. But this Islander team, I think they're built to last, and I would not be surprised to see them in the Stanley Cup Finals versus, to be continued.
Takes the coward's way out. What do you think, Corny? This next round, Trotz versus Cooper.
Well, I think maybe two of the best coaches in the league, you know, with the best teams and great goaltending. You know, I shouldn't say best teams, but among the top five or so. you know, I hate to pick against the Islanders, but like this Tampa Bay team looks unstoppable. Like Carolina was a great team. They rolled over them in five games. They won the cup last year and they didn't even have their full arsenal, which they have right now. It's like, I really believe the Islanders are good at making it hard on skilled, talented teams, but like Tampa's just loaded. So, you know, I think it goes the distance, and I'm not going to pick against the Isles, but boy, Tampa's a tough one.
Did you guys see what Dougie Hamilton said about Tampa today?
$18 million over the cap, and he's right.
We lost to a team $18 million over the cap or whatever they are. And before we go to break, by the way, I love that fact, as does Paul Campbell from In Goal Magazine, responding to Dougie Hamilton's quote, we lost to a team $18 million over the salary cap. I'm actually on this page with Paul Campbell from In Goal. Here's a tweet from Paul. We'll go to break on this. I love this. I hope Tampa Bay keeps upping the ante. Next year, Stamkos and Hedman missed the whole season on LTIR. Year after, Vasi and Point. I want them in the playoffs, $1 billion over the cap, an all-star team, a squad that makes NHL-stocked Olympic teams look bad. Give me that villain. I'm with Paul. Give me that villain in the NHL who looks at salary caps and scoffs. More on Hockey Central. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Tonight, it is Vegas and Colorado. Get on that page in a moment. Keep it here. Okay, so this is that that brief sliver of the show where we actually get to talk about what's going on tonight. And tonight is all about, can the Colorado Avalanche stay alive? Something we didn't think we'd be saying after two games when the Avs went up 2-0. But here we are. What a performance so far for the Vegas Golden Knights. What they've been able to do to the team that many thought would win the Stanley Cup is nothing short of remarkable. Stewie, what happens tonight in Vegas at T-Mobile?
I do not know. I do not know. I don't have my crystal ball, but I think the Colorado Avalanche have to do a better job managing the puck. 11 giveaways last game to Vegas Golden Knights. 3, manage the puck better. Give your chance an opportunity to get back and turn this into a game 7.
Borny.
Yeah, I feel like Colorado is missing a certain player, like a second, third line center, which is too bad. But I still think Colorado pushes it 7. It's going to be a tight one tonight, probably overtime.
All right, fingers crossed. I mean, so far the games have been really good. I know the first one, the blowout game when Colorado ran all over a tired, at times frustrated Vegas Golden Knights team, wasn't much of a game. But since then, this has been a great series. Two great teams, and I'm with you guys. Let's have this one go 7, man. Let's go, Avs.